I started immediately.
How you like that, dude?
We on, baby.
Squarespace. That brings us to our sponsor, Squarespace.
Are you kind of gay and can't get a fucking boner for your wife?
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. Are you overweight and drink?
Are you Roman ready, dude?
I am.
Do you ever see those? Dude, that's the funniest fucking billboard. Like, what are, you know, guys that can't get their dicks hard like Roman soldiers?
Yeah, dude, why is all the dick stuff like Trojan and like very like...
Because people unconsciously affiliate themselves with like conquest. You get someone in their darkest hour, dude, when their phallus fails, which is like, you know, that's someone questioning their whole thing. And you're like, no, dude, like you're a Babylonian. And they're like, yeah, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. The fuck am I talking
about?
I'm
going to fuck this
You think
lady.
The fucking Trojan warriors wore fucking condoms, dude?
Probably not.
Yeah, dude. There was the cookie wrapper. Very noisy. Touch that thing. Very noisy.
Oh my god! It's
very noisy. Cellophane might be one of the noisiest.
Actually, it's funny because it says serving size. A quarter of the cookie is one serving.
True.
The per container is 490 calories.
Yeah.
60 grams of carbs.
Do you think anyone that buys a cookie from the gas station observes like the serving size?
No one has. I've eaten these cookies before, and I've never once even been like, huh.
Snapped it into force.
Oh, I'm getting 11 milligrams of calcium. That's good.
Nice.
That's what I get from these Sheetz macadamia cookies.
From the entire cookie or per serving?
That was per serving. You can get a ton of magnesium.
Good magnesium.
If you need to boost your mag. Yeah. I'm on to boosting mag lately.
I'm pretty sure people open those and like are pissed there's not two cookies in there.
You have to be.
But yeah, Roman Ready's my shit. I won't say who. Billy found Roman Ready in somebody's car. Somebody's, you know, an elder. And dude.
An elder?
Yeah, an elder. An older person.
I know.
Not my father, I'll say that.
No, but I know who it was.
Dude, and it was so fucking funny.
Was this person on a podcast for the first time?
No.
Oh, I thought it was Hoss.
No, fuck no. Hoss would snap, dude. I wonder, Hoss probably stays hard as hell.
Hoss seems like he gets hard.
He probably gets hard as hell.
I've been getting hard lately.
What's going on?
Yeah, I don't know. I've just been getting rock hard.
Go to your doctor, dude. Be like, I don't know what the hell's going on. I'm getting fucking hard as hell.
Dude, I keep getting hard as hell.
So you're getting rock hard.
No, I lost a little bit of weight. And
yeah, man.
I've been just jerking off as hard as I can.
And you're getting hard. You're getting rock hard for jerking off.
Damn. That was a beast of a fart I just had.
Wait, you've been getting hard as hell for yourself?
Yeah.
That's what's up, man.
And I've just been getting into it, you know.
I fucking love that. I'm pumped.
I'm getting so hard, man.
So are you been lubing or something? Like, that'll get you hard. If you're lubing.
I might have to get a fleshlight. Dude, remember when Beezer got laid up from fucking 7-Eleven snickerdoodles?
Yeah, man.
Put him in bed, dude.
Yeah.
You can't munch these.
No, dude. He had doodle tooth.
He had a severe case of dudes.
What was that? His tooth got like hollowed out?
He just got a dead tooth from snickerdoodles.
Damn.
Just smoking cigarettes and being like, oh, I'll get some snickerdoodles. And snacking them in his bed.
He was laid up for like a couple days.
Yeah, he was in a tomb.
I'm happy.
We're just
to hear.
Being silly.
I'm happy to hear you.
This is a silly podcast.
This is silly. This is very, very silly.
I wish I could fucking kill you.
Why? What the fuck?
Matt, what are you going to do at the beach? Are you going to? I was thinking about building a hole.
Yeah.
Waist deep, with a little bit of room in there to just fucking whack.
I've been buried in sand before.
Whack at the beach, though.
Really?
Yeah. If you dug a pit, just shoulder.
Sure.
Shoulder. You could feasibly jerk off at the beach in front of everyone.
It's just your head coming.
Yeah.
And just. Yeah, you could.
Then they'd see your face just like.
Here's the problem, though. We're going to need a something like a 5-gallon bucket because we're going to need like walls because yes. That sand gets in. You're going to be scratching yourself.
Yes.
So you'd have to.
True.
If we put our dick in a plastic bag while we're buried, so we give ourselves a little bit of like clean room and like have like a latex glove on, we could just underneath the bag, I mean, obviously a gallon size. Right?
You know what we could do?
Half gallon.
We could just install, we could cut it, carve out a fleshlight. Just lay flat on the sand.
All take turns, dude.
And occasionally
wash it out in the ocean in between.
Yes,
pigs.
And go out to sea,
dude. That
I hope
would
my
be...
dad will be cool with that. If my dad's not cool with that, I'm
butthole. We should bury one of those big. Remember the big ass thing we saw? It's like we should bury like an entire big fake ass.
You know what would be really funny to bury one of those fake asses? Except, all right. So I'm laying.
Yeah.
And we cover. I'm actually. Bent
no.
at the waist, yeah. And we put the fake ass as if it's actually my ass, and dudes are just fucking me. And I'm like,
just all day long. Just all day long. just slamming dude, you, dude.
This dude's getting raped.
There's like seagulls landing on your ass.
Mexicans love, the lads love getting pictures at the memorials.
That was wild.
What an honorable
thing. There was a mom and daughter.
I think they do that just to throw it in everybody's face back home.
But they don't.
It's like, we made it, baby.
True.
Look it up. This is, we're at the memorial right now.
True. They could have just been stunting. There might have been no.
I think that's lad stunting.
Oh, you think that was absolutely no quinceañera? Because there was a mom and her daughter in like just.
Prom dresses.
Knocked. Yeah, prom dresses.
How about the mom?
26 degrees. The mom.
How about those cans, dude?
Tamales were out.
That's the one thing I remember from visiting the Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah.
Massive Mexican tits.
Yes, dude.
By the reflecting pool.
It was crazy. I might go back to the reflecting pool and reflect on those big titties. Dude. Just staring in the water. If you look, dude, that'd be sick if you go in the reflecting pool and you just see big Mexican tits and you're like, oh, sweet.
They were countries built on.
They were Fs.
They were Fs.
Sure. They were Fs, dude. They were FAs, dude.
Absolute FAs.
That was crazy. Just getting those bombs in a dress. And she probably gave her a talk before the reflection pool. She's like, Doña, one day your upper thoracic mobility will be trashed, but you will have the biggest titties.
Yes.
That's the quinceañera, just get ready for having Fs, dude.
How do they get Fs out of nowhere?
I don't know. Mexican ladies kind of
they bulk.
Have a couple kids, dude. They fucking... She's probably like, the transformation is near.
The Incredible Hulk.
You are live.
Like, you won't like me when I'm pregnant. And then they're just like, whoa.
Yeah, she's like, you are lithe and slender, senorita, but we will pop out a kid
and you will transform into a unit.
Into a fucking,
wagon. Everyone's going to notice your bombs at the fucking reflecting pool. Those things were fucking crazy.
Dude, they ruled. They stopped me in my tracks.
They did. They were the most awe-inspiring thing we saw.
You went one way, I went another way. I was like, look, you can pull me off that fence, but I'm going and getting front row center to these big Mexican bombs, dude.
Of course, big government tried to stop us from that, too.
Of course.
Capitol Police were like, keep it moving, fellas. And we're like, yeah, right, dude.
I can stare for 7 seconds. That's my legal right as a citizen. That is a legal right. You're allowed to stare at a woman, I think, for like, I think it's 3 seconds. You're within your legal right to just go.
Yeah,
and then
sense.
Keep it moving. You're allowed. No one can stop you from doing that. I think you can do. I don't know what the age thing is.
How close can you be? That's another. You got to observe Fauci 6 feet. You can't be up in the grill staring.
Oh yeah, I think there is a foot thing. I think as long as you do, I think if you just give it your wingspan. So if you go up, don't touch the girl. But if you go like, I'm legally allowed to do this. I'm measuring the distance I can be, so I can stare at you for full 3 seconds, and I'll be on my way, man. That's my legal right.
Yeah, also you can hit him with a hard stare in passing. If you're both walking on the sidewalk, you can hit him the whole
true.
To the point where you can't turn your head. That's the only thing.
True, yeah.
You can stare as long as you want while you're walking and passing on the sidewalk, but the second you turn your head, it becomes a bit of a harassment issue.
We got to start bird dogging pussy harder, dude.
I think we need to.
Just turn it around and be like, look, I don't want anything. I'm just bird dogging you.
And even if I got canceled again.
Sweet, you did it. Yeah, you did it. Yes. You put the ball over the end zone.
if I got canceled again, if you get canceled twice, that means you're doing something pretty good.
True.
Like if you got canceled and then came back, and they're like, he's back.
Get him.
I mean, the more canceled you get, literally the more talented you are.
True.
The fact that you can survive one
is
impressive. Like, shout out Mel.
Dude, Mel.
Mel just gets canceled.
He's a cockroach, dude.
Like, you called him dude.
He gets canceled.
Yeah, hard N word.
Yeah, he gets canceled for like the. I mean, he also pluralized it, which no one gives him credit for. So it's like when you shoot 10 people, he got like a. He pluralizes, so they got to give him like 10 counts of the N word.
Oh, because he said.
Pack everybody.
Pack off. Yeah.
So that's like, you know, it's like shooting at 15 people.
That was
like,
a tough one, though, because that was a private recording. Mm-hmm. What he said was so atrocious that it does kind of cancel out the private recording. But there's kind of a part of me that's always like, it's a private recording, man. You can't fuck with
that. Yeah. Are you even allowed to do
Although
that?
I think it was a voicemail on someone else's phone.
I think he left a voicemail.
So he recorded. He was like, fucking press record.
I legitimately didn't know he was Australian.
He did a Billy. I had to tell Billy last week Mel Gibson was Australian.
I had no
fucking
idea.
And Russell Crowe.
No, I think I knew Russell Crowe. I had no idea until today that Mel Gibson was Australian. I watched part of an interview, and I was like, what the fuck?
Oh, is he doing a bit?
This guy's fucking Australian?
Oh, maybe that's why you liked Mel. Every time he said something, you're like, he's doing the Australian accent, dude. He's clearly fucking kidding. He's like, the Jews are bad. Like, he's joking. Anyway, how are you? What's going on?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. The weekend was a
good weekend.
That was
victorious,
dude.
Oh man,
our nation's capital.
We went down to our nation's capital, paid a visit to Lincoln.
Dude, it was so, man. I it was funny. We were right near the Capitol, and Shane literally had to yank me by my boots to pull me down off the barricades. Oh. I was going over.
Matt scaled every fence he could see.
I was going over, dude.
Of course you were. You're a patriot.
I need to go. I need to take a selfie. That was important for us to go take selfies.
We should have recorded an episode from Pelosi's desk.
We could have.
Easily.
They couldn't have stopped us.
There's no chance they would have stopped us.
But yeah, I was like, I was over the edge. He grabbed my, he's like, we got a show to do. And I was like, you're right. Our responsibility is to defend.
And we both put our hands behind each other's necks. And just like, we got a show tonight.
I know we both want to go in there and take pictures of ourselves in those fucking swivel chairs.
Let's go to the Lincoln Memorial and honor this country properly by reading it around a bunch of tourists that don't care and Mexicans taking quinceañera photos.
All right. Yes.
This is it.
Oh, we're on.
We're doing another history podcast. This time we've got the Colin Quinn.
Yes.
And today's topic is Vietnam. What a time.
Yeah. What a crazy time. Hey. I mean, in some ways, I feel like it's the most important. It changed everything. Plus, it was at that time, you know?
Yeah.
But it changed. I always feel like these things have like bigger, like what comes first? Vietnam makes people. Was it a revolution where everybody's like, we're fighting against the system, or was Vietnam the thing that triggers it off? And would it have happened without Vietnam? Would the 60s have happened without Vietnam? Yeah. Because Vietnam, as you know, I'm bragging about my extensive knowledge, started for America in the 40s.
Yeah.
And it was because we were helping France, because we owed France from the Revolutionary War.
The thing I've looked into, dude, France dragged us into this to the point France owned Vietnam. Mm-hmm. It was a colony. Japan took it when they went, they got a little wild.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the United States liberated it.
Okay.
And that was the thing. Ho Chi Minh, the guy who ended up being the leader of the Viet Cong, was like, I love America. He was writing letters to Truman like, I love you. Thank you. They were like, Americans are the only free people on earth.
Yes.
These are incredible people. The leader of them loved America.
Yeah.
And then he started, this is the craziest part. So France goes back in after the war and is like, we're taking it back. And America was like, don't do that.
Yeah.
And we were kind of siding with Ho Chi Minh and the Vietnamese. And then France was like, this is the beginning of the Cold War. So France is like, hey, if you guys don't support us, maybe we'll start listening to from Russia. And then America was like, all right, we'll can help you out.
Damn.
Anyway.
That is interesting. And by the way, speaking of Ho Chi Minh writing letters to Truman, all those letters were redacted and like, till like 1970 something.
And half of them Truman never got because the Secret Service was like,
wow.
He doesn't need to see these. Yeah.
Yeah, making those decisions. Everybody made, but that's the whole thing about Vietnam too. Everybody's making their own decisions. Determining, so the when you have power, you know, when you disperse power in that way, everybody goes, I'll take this part. And they're all just like,
And because of the Cold War, the Secret Service and the CIA were like, this is more important. Like the CIA versus the KGB in Russia and the Soviet Union, that became the two superpowers.
Yeah.
And they were doing stuff like undermining the president to be like, the war against Russia is more, I mean, it was, I don't like Vietnam because of how frustrating and stupid it is.
Well, but first of all, the CIA, when you think about it, their whole thing was the Cold War first. So all the drug dealing that happened in the 70s and 80s was again from every cartel, the CIA, when they're like, okay, CIA, they would stop the DEA from doing their job all the time because they're like, the Cold War, these are anti-communists. But they're the heads of the cartels, but they're anti-communist, and that was their priority. So they made that choice, and I'm sure the president didn't want to make the choice, whoever it was during all those times, but that was the choice they always made.
Damn, then they did the Just Say No like 10 years later, and like, come on, guys, don't do drugs.
They were still telling the DEA back.
Vietnam, the French. The French are fucking dickheads.
Dude, brutal.
They were dickheads.
So they dragged us in.
They absolutely dragged us in.
Well, they dragged us in, but we wanted into. I mean, we could have left. We could have left 10. We could have left. I mean, I read this book, A Bright Shining Light. I just happened to be reading it. By the way, whenever you read a book, especially a Kindle, try to find out how many pages it is.
First. Oh, yeah.
This book's 800 pages. Fuck. So I was reading like, oh, this is a bright shining light. It doesn't sound like a long book.
Yeah.
It's the history of everything. But France, they left. We helped them. So there was one that would turn Ho Chi Minh. One of the things that turned him is we decided we supplied France with all these, all the mortars and everything where they destroyed a lot of it is in Vietnam, and that turned them against America too. Oh, Ho Chi Minh,
It was there was a battle, I forget the name of it. So I was just watching Ken Burns on it. What is it?
Dien Bien Phu.
Yes. So the French were kind of fucking up the Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the same as us versus them. They had superior firepower. But again, just like time and time again, the Vietnamese were very good at guerrilla warfare because we trained them during World War II.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, a little, you know, Mujahideen type shit.
Yeah.
And they were about to come to talks, France and Vietnam. They're about to come to the table. Before they went to have talks, they both tried to get one more offensive in, so they had leverage when they went to talks.
Nice.
So France sets up at, where's it?
Bien Phu, yeah.
They just put themselves at the bottom of this valley, and they're like, we're just going to build an airfield here. We're going to fuck them up. One of the French generals was like, I have too many guns. We're going to fuck these dudes up.
Damn.
And the Vietnamese surrounded them in this valley and just destroyed them. The French guy, the general that led that, killed himself honorably because he was like, we're going to wipe the floor with these guys.
Why are they going to valley? Isn't that a bad? I'm not a military tactician, but isn't that like not the good idea?
Yeah, it was a bad idea.
Well, it's funny you say that because even Quezon, the famous 14 years later, America did the same thing. Set themselves up was surrounded by all the mountains. So created a valley and set up an airstrip, a landing strip in the valley and got killed because of it.
Damn.
I mean, it's really amazing. I mean, the other thing about Vietnam is you realize how you always think when you're young, at least, like the people in charge, they spend all their time doing this. They know what they're doing. But there were so many egos involved that the few people who were like, this is not working, were just like, stop.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're saying. Just because of ego. People think, oh, their motive was they wanted money. They would still get the money. This was about like something else, a power struggle that where you pay the price or the troops pay the price.
Oh, it sucks. Yeah, if you're just some dude sitting in a village and some guy had an argument and you're just getting blown up and you're like, what's this about?
Oh, and the other thing that
some guy couldn't come to grips with it. He was like, no, I'm right.
In the early 60s, they had this Hamlet program where they would bring, they said, we're going to bring all these weapons to each hamlet, all these little hamlets, because it was kind of half and half, like North Korea. Mm. And they brought all these weapons to all these hamlets and said, look, you're in charge of the weapons. And it was all American-made modern stuff. And, of course, the Viet Cong, who kind of controlled more or less, they had the hearts of the people, they took all the weapons. So we supplied the Viet Cong with all these weapons in the early 60s, and it kept them going.
It genuinely makes me, like, all my information's from the Ken Burns documentary.
Right.
And I watch it, and every time I'm watching it, by episode two, I'm like, what is going, like, it's, it doesn't make sense.
Well, I don't know if this was in the Ken Burns documentary, but did you see the guy, I think it is, I saw the Ken Burns, he's Beckwith, with the guy, an advisor, Colonel Beckwith.
Oh, yeah.
Charging Charlie Beckwith, and he goes, they interview him, and he goes, what do you think of the Viet Cong? He goes, finest soldiers I've ever seen. This is in 1960.
What?
He goes, what? The Viet Cong. He goes, best soldiers I've ever seen. I had 200 of them under my command. And right away, you're like, oh, we should have realized something was up then.
Well, they'd been fighting for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
These dudes have been fighting since like World War II. They didn't stop fighting.
Really?
From World War II until the end of Vietnam, they were fighting constantly.
And their home territory.
Yeah.
And they're so small, they had to be crafty. All the tunnels, all the trails, they know everything.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. Was that the first American war where, like, the American troops were like, what's the point of this?
The first time. I think Korea, I'm sure they were a little bit like, actually.
Yeah, Korea, MacArthur screwed up Korea.
Yeah.
MacArthur, everybody was like, don't do this. MacArthur's like, the people loved him.
Yeah.
The Korean people like, this guy's our savior. And he just was like a king over there.
Yeah.
And then he just said, we're going to do it this way. I forget. He landed on the coast. So he did something that was strategically a nightmare. And even his generals are like, don't do this. What are you doing? And he goes, I know what I'm doing. And
he had an ego, dude.
That stinks.
He referred to himself in the third person.
Did he?
He was fucking nuts. Yeah, he was wild. MacArthur was wild.
Sucks.
He might get a bad rap, though. I kind of like him.
Yeah, no, he was beloved. Look, the people loved him because Japan loved him because after World War II, they were expecting, because they were so horrendous during World War II, they expected him to really bear down, and he treated them like, he said, you treat these people like human beings. So Japanese people treat him like a god. So he felt like a god.
That's tough to shake off. That would get me.
Yeah.
If I was getting like samurai glory, I'd be like, yeah, you know what? Yeah,
I know.
Even dude, if like presenting you sword.
Those cool suits. If I had one of those cool suits, I'm like, who do I? Also,
I think that's why God never even let me sell out like the Beacon or something like that. He keeps me at a level of 300 to 400 seats on the road, and there's a reason for it.
Oh man!
So what was it? So chronologically, the French direct. So we were like boys.
So it was
with
a French colony. Then there's World War II. Yeah. Japan takes over, and like always, when Japan would invade. All the Asian countries were like, nice, finally the white colonists are gone.
Yeah.
We're going to get treated well. And they immediately get starved to death and beheaded and fucked with.
It sucks.
So then when the Americans liberated Vietnam and the British, whoever, they were like, we love America. Then France after World War II, who just got their ass whooped.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, actually, we want those colonies back.
Nice.
Yeah.
And Vietnam was like, no, this is ours now.
Yeah.
We're independent again. So then,
do they have to write a letter to Vietnam like, hey, buddy,
we're coming back?
Bad news.
Yeah.
Sorry. We should start chronologically.
Yeah.
I watch is Ken Burns.
What are we talking about?
I don't know. Whatever you want.
What you said. And then, France, when they lost, you know what I mean? The Geneva talks, I think it was the first Geneva talk back then, maybe not. But then,
that was the best one.
Was that probably
that was
the best
one? First view was
we're like, hey, I like Geneva, you know. And then we went in. Eisenhower said, we're just going to arm them in the 50s, you know. We're just going to keep arming them because we don't want communism to spread down there. And then because China, they were about China taking over Vietnam. But Vietnam wasn't worried because they were half communist. Like you said, by that point, Ho Chi Minh was pro-American until that horrible event where the France destroyed like all these innocent villages, and then he turned on America because we supplied France.
Bien Phu
is when they got cocky.
America started supplying France because the only way French could get anything was airdrops.
Yeah.
Because they were in Upton Valley getting destroyed. Like 8,000 French dudes died.
Jesus.
Again, though, the Vietnamese lost like 3-1 casualties, but they were like, that's a victory.
Yeah.
They were getting wiped out constantly.
Yeah. What was that one quote? Like, all we have to do is just stay here. And just die.
And yeah.
That was one of the Vietnamese soldiers, like, all we have to do is just not become extinct and we win. And I was like,
great.
Yeah, that's tough.
Well, that's the problem with everything, right? I mean, anytime you go anywhere, the people that live there, they have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, you're trapped. A trapped rat is going to fight to the death.
Yeah.
But so then,
it got to the point where they're talking about like the United States was literally funding 80%. Of the French versus Vietnamese war. We were giving France 80% of the budget to win the war. Yeah.
Yeah.
France sucks.
France did a bad job and then they left and then we decided it's such a weird, I look at it so like psychologically, like what I understand about the domino theory was part of it, but the psychological mindset you put yourself into, there was this guy Harkins, the general, he was the guy that ran it. He is really responsible in many ways because we go back and tell the president and these guys, it's going good. But even then, the presidents, the ambassadors, they all went along. It just goes to show. I mean, I quote my mother all the time. I rest her soul. But she used to always say, people, and I see this deeper and deeper in everything, and this is a perfect example. People are attracted to bullshit. And if you offer them something that's quality or truthful and bullshit, they go for the bullshit every time. And I said to my mother at the time, I go, that's true most of the time. She goes, I didn't say most of the time. I said every time. And Vietnam's a perfect example because he was this guy, Van. This whole book, Bright Shining Lights, is about this guy, Van, who was in Vietnam. He was the early guy. And he's like, look, we're going to lose. Here's what's happening. The Hamlets, we're giving away our guns. The communists are taking, we're bombing village. We were searching to destroy in 1963.
Jesus.
And he goes, we're losing everybody. We got to either win them over through like social revolution, the corruption of the South Vietnamese. They're taking everything. Their special forces that we trained are destroying people. This is terrible. We're losing. And everybody, even the people that kind of knew better, just went like, oh, and then somebody was like, no, we're just going to do this. And they're like, okay, let's do that. And it wasn't that it was easier. And they almost like will themselves into like, if you've ever been involved in like a TV or movie project, right? And everyone's sitting there and you start out going, it's got to be this. And then slowly you start to go, oh yeah, know that. And then somebody that wasn't involved in the first month walks in and goes, are you guys all gone crazy? And yes, you have.
And no one wants to say it sucks. They're like, no, this is good.
You start to believe it. Yeah. You get in this stupor. And that's what I think happened in Vietnam with our military.
You're on the set of Aquaman 6, and you're like, this still is good.
This is the best picture.
And you ever go to a screening of a movie?
No.
And then I've gone to screenings of movies, and you'll sit there and be like, that movie was really good. If you're around the movie, you know the cast, you know, for the people. Yeah. Like, it was good. It was bad. And then if I've been with people that go, are you crazy? That was shit. And then later I'm like, I was in a state of temporary insanity. And I feel like that's what happened.
The domino effect bothers me. It just annoys me.
You don't like dominoes?
Obviously, I crush dominoes.
No, you don't. I'll tell you, you don't like that slippery slope theory. That's basically the domino effect, right? I agree.
When it comes to, why we were in Vietnam.
Yeah.
Was they were like, well, if China's influence and the Soviet influence gets Vietnam, they're going to get all of Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
And it's like, so?
Well, but at the time, Russia had just taken all of Eastern Europe in the early 50s. So in the grand scheme of things, considering how people felt at that time.
I know they were scared of it, but it's.
I mean, it wasn't like just some crazy. It was like, wait. They just took Czechoslovakia, Hungary, all these places.
Yeah, yeah.
They're moving. Everybody in Europe is on the same page. Everybody's like post-World War II, and they're like, oh, they're going to move. Because everybody knew even in World War II, remember what Patton was like, we should go right into Russia.
Yeah.
Patton, by the way, an enemy of my family.
Really?
One of my uncles was 19 years old, World War II, captured by the Germans, POW camp for a year. German POW camp. 90 pounds. He's 19 years old. Maybe he's 20 by now. He's in the hospital when they finally release him. Patton's visiting all the wounded troops. Then he gets to the POWs. They go, these are all the POWs. He goes, I don't talk to cowards. Patton says, he goes, I don't talk to cowards. You're supposed to die with your unit. I don't believe in POWs. So my uncle hated Patton. Every family get together. People like, especially when the movie Patton came out, it was like, hey, George, you're going to go see the Patton movie? And he's like, his name was George, too. And he's like, beat it. You know?
Damn, he went and just snubbed the POWs?
He literally goes, he called them cowards.
Yeah.
My uncle's like 90 pounds. He's 19, 20 years old.
One of the opening scenes in Patton is when he's slapping a guy in the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
He's slapping him, calling him a fucking coward.
PTSD in the hospital. That's right. The PTSD guy.
All right.
Yeah, that's what a jerk. So,
yeah, where are we at?
We're saying that you don't believe in the domino theory.
I mean, I understand at the time there's a hysteria. It's the same reason we went into Iraq. We were like, they're trying to kill us. They hate our freedom.
They do.
And after 15, 20 years, we're like, what was that?
Right. There was no weapons.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know.
Well, I remember that remember the book I was talking about, the George Friedman book, where it was the next 100 years and they predicted all that stuff? Remember like 2 weeks before Russia invaded Ukraine?
Yeah.
That he was saying that U.S. is so far and ahead of everybody, like economically, militarily, that all they're trying to do is break up every alliance that forms.
Yeah.
So it's like it's not about winning wars, it's about just destabilizing.
But at this point, Russia was.
They're gaining.
They were pretty powerful. They just got the nuke.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden,
by the way, to that end, I think it was Ellsberg, the guy with the Pentagon Papers, which was a big thing. But when one of these guys was looking into the Russia thing in 1960, he was working with the nuclear, and he said it was shocking because they were like Russian. They were nowhere in the same ballpark with us. They had nothing compared to us. And the military just had this, narrative in their head, like Russia and us. And they were just child's play compared to us at the time, 58, 59, something like that. I think that was Ellsberg, Pentagon Papers, but I'm not sure, but something like that. But yeah, that was the other side of it.
Damn, so we're fighting that was bullshit.
But they did take all those countries. I mean, that was real.
Yeah, yeah. But all those countries are
Eastern Europe of
and
that,
Southeast Asia.
But were they shit then or were they
because of
because people say the same thing about any colony,
Yeah, like you're talking like Macedonia, Bulgaria.
And but this brings up the question about capitalism versus communism. How important is free will? That's the question. So I don't know. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what this whole thing is about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, or I think it's human organization schemes. Aren't there people at the top of communism who live like very well and kind of rule still anyway?
Yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's just kind of like which one do you want, peasants? It's like, you get to compete and have fun, or it's like, or you share. It's,
Right. Yeah.
But
I mean, obviously, I like capitalism. Communism. I like the idea of capitalism.
The what?
Capitalism. I mean, obviously it's when it's unfettered, it's not going to work. But the idea of capitalism I like because it appeals to humans' nature's greedy side, which I feel like anytime you appeal to people based on something that's not so innocent, that's probably the healthy way to go. Because that's how people's nature is.
It's not repressed.
But if it goes too, obviously you can't have people just, you know, doing whatever they want. That's a problem.
Just going into space.
Was that,
just guys just launching themselves into space.
I mean, the results are in. So far, it's one in terms capitalism? Of like remaining a thing in the world.
Yeah.
It's one. It's one.
And
it's winning.
And communism has to try harder to keep people from giving their opinion. So that means it's not a good system.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it doesn't work very well. We're dancing with that a little bit.
Yeah.
Not being able to say stuff. So.
Oh, absolutely.
We'll see. Maybe that'll go well. Who knows? Maybe the whole thing will just collapse and we'll all fucking die.
I said it was a weird narcotic state where you know, it's been kind of a thing after World War II. It's gone now, but where we're like, no, we don't really fail. Everybody wants this because it works so well. Not just World War II. The Marshall Plan even worked because we're dealing with all these countries and suddenly they're coming back. By 1960s, 50s, Germany's even back. So we're like the benign guys that we control things, but everybody's kind of like getting their thing. Who wants to be on the team? And then, you know, we didn't realize it was a whole undercurrent. So like the overcurrent is Europe, then the undercurrent is the colonies. So all the colonies were belly starting in the late 50s.
Oh, yeah.
From Africa to, you know, South America. And, so there was that whole thing going on, you know.
The vacay spots were popping
off. There was so much going on. Isn't it weird?
All the sandals.
All the sandals resorts
where they've had it up to here.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So it was kind of a weird, it was an interesting time.
I can see communism appealing to that.
Yeah.
You're down
with Cuba. Look at Cuba with the whole mafia thing. And it was such an interesting thing where it was like, you know, they letting all these capitalist things in, and they were like, no, and Castro came in, and you know what I mean? They, even though Cuba failed, they didn't like the corruption level that was going on. And same thing with South Vietnam.
Yeah. That was the thing. We propped up some dumbass. And we would never get rid of him. And then as soon as you saw that part, we were watching it.
Yeah.
We propped up this dude who just immediately started persecuting the Buddhists.
Absolutely.
Started.
Yep.
His wife was a fucking monster who was like, good, I'm glad they're burning themselves. Yes.
His wife and his brother.
Yeah, they were just morons.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we couldn't back off because we were like, it's still better than communism.
Yep. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Ho Chi Minh was kind of cool.
Right. He liked us at the beginning.
Yeah.
He wasn't totally into this thing. And then
it's tough. It's
like, but he became,
it's like assistant manager.
Now, did you know a lot of guys that were in Vietnam?
I knew a few. Yeah. I was a kid. I was a kid during the whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember as a little kid, you'd watch, it was on the news every day at 5 and 6 o'clock, you'd see the footage from Vietnam. So it was like such a part. It wasn't like I was shocked because I wasn't from the generation before that. That was all I knew. I was seven, 8 years old, 9 years old. But I remember seeing footage of Vietnam all the time on TV and the news, and it was just a constant thing. And I remember one time in class, we were talking about Vietnam. This is probably 71, or maybe 70. And the teacher or the kids were going, yeah, Vietnam is bad. And this girl in our class starts screaming and crying because her brother got killed in Vietnam. So I knew probably three guys, older guys, they didn't hang out with me, but I mean, I knew three guys that were Marines in Vietnam that got wounded, that came home, and they all had those cliche Marine personalities. I mean, Vietnam vet personality. Yeah. The Army jacket, by themselves, the big beards when they're home, heavy drinker, heavy smoker, you know, prone to outbursts, but still good guys. Like, they were guys we liked. You know, they weren't like, people hung out with them and talked to them, but they had that other side to them, partly from being in the war, partly from what they did, partly from what Vietnam did, and partly from their reaction when they came home. Yeah. It wasn't like you walk around, people weren't going, thank you for your service either, you know.
Yikes. That stinks.
Yeah, so I knew a few guys,
Yeah, that was the thing we were talking about. O'Connor brought this up. We were talking about last night. He's like, imagine today's college student. Imagine being a dude who got drafted and had to go live through hell, and then you get home, and one of these fuckers throws like a bag of piss at you and is like, baby killer.
Right. Oh, my God.
That's when I would join the Ohio National Guard and I would head down to Kent State and say, fuck you guys.
Yeah, true.
That's But it was interesting that they all did have that personality.
Yeah.
Even the guys I knew, guy across the street, my friend's brother, was a Vietnam vet that didn't fight. He was a airplane mechanic. And even he was screwed up. Yeah.
My uncle was a Marine, and he never talks about it. Ever. Wow. Like, literally never talks about it. One night, he and I got drunk, and he opened up about it.
Really?
And wow. It was wild. He saw a fucking Chinook get hit and just spun. Dudes flew everywhere. I mean, it was... Now, my other uncle was in Vietnam, and he is a little more... He's a little more sociopath, like, psycho. That's like... I killed a guy.
Yeah.
And I was like, how was that? And it was just me and him, and he goes, it's incredible. I was like, yo, yo.
I told you, I knew a guy who was a sniper, and he was saying, he's like, you get addicted to the feeling of killing people. And he was like, he was a nice dude. He's like, I didn't have like ill will towards people, but he's like, I like would watch people eat dinner, and as soon as they finish, right in the head. He's like, by like the 12th one, he's like, you get like a God complex and you're like, I'm ended. This God is done. Damn.
Yeah.
You just watch people hang out.
The guy in Vietnam, I've told you this before. It was like a 90 degree trail and you couldn't see around the corner. So he's walking one way. A Viet Cong was walking up the path. He said they literally bumped into each other in the jungle. And then it was just a race to see who could get who could get their gun out faster. And he got his out.
Woo!
First. Jesus Christ.
Now and then he got hit with a, he got hit with a rocket propelled grenade. He blew his nipples missing, his calves off. Yeah. And he had to lay there because they're in the middle of a firefight. He had to lay there for 3 hours on the jungle floor, like, I'm dead. I'm dying for sure. Yeah. I mean, he's a hero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, and is it that different from war? Like, my father was in Korea and Korean and war. And he said the most disturbing part was, which is still chilling, that the lieutenants or the officers would nightly bring in the Korean prisoners and beat the living shit out of them. And always like, hey, Brooklyn, you want a piece? And he's like, no, thanks. And it would just like just torture the guys, just beat them for fun. So it was already starting to lose the,
the glamour of World War II.
And then, but Vietnam is a different, like, I feel like they were, This setup, even though it happened in World War II, it happens in every war. The setup of search and destroy is what fucked them all up. Because here you are, you grow up in the '50s, you're watching these movies, you have a little bit, even if you're not innocent, you know you're capable of, but you're still, and then suddenly you're in the middle of this thing where they go, no, you have to burn all these hamlets. Because like I said, the hamlet program, the Vietnamese took over the hamlets. So they go, and the Vietnamese are in there. And whether they are or not, they're in enough where you're like, okay, it's them and me. And so you're torturing all these peasants out of their house, torturing their village.
Burning their
village. That's the strategy.
How long did they do that for?
That's our strategy.
How long did they do
that
for?
The
whole
time.
From 1963.
Yeah.
From 1963.
Jesus Christ.
And they said even, that's what Morley Safer was, the guy from 60 Minutes. Who I always thought that was an annoying guy, you know. But meanwhile, he was a reporter. And he had they filmed in 1965, torching of a hamlet. 1965, early in the war. And that's when everyone started protesting the Vietnam War. Because they watched on TV, they're like, wait, this is like liberating France. What's going on here? It was just all these peasants running. They're torching the house and shooting the pigs. Like that was on the national news, on the evening news.
That's what you were watching?
Well, I don't remember that, but I'm saying, shocked the whole country. That's when the protest began.
We were the good guys. We were always the good guys.
But we were always the good guys.
They were showing it like, check us out. Never like, boo.
No, the news was like, hey.
This is crazy.
That's because the news was doing their job.
True, yeah.
And they're like, here's what's actually happening.
No, right. They just shot. And Morley Safer had to leave. Like, they were threatening him because they were saying he took it out of context. He didn't, which he probably did.
Took it out of context.
Well, I'm saying. They weren't saying that they'd been getting shot, like Marines had gotten shot from that village.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm saying it wasn't like, but.
No, they
still
were bad.
It was a stupid strategy.
You see, this is what happened. Yeah. And it was crazy because the French had just done it before us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So they did this thing called pacification where they were like, they tried to do the social set. Like they were like, we're going to help build your rice paddies up. We're going to give you food. We're going to build schools. And during the day it worked. Mm-hmm. And then at night the Viet Cong would come in. Take the food.
That's
take
right.
The fucking guns. Hide guns in the villages. Hide weapons. Yes. Hide soldiers. So then during the day, they'd come back and they'd just keep getting supplies and they'd do raids from the villages with the weapon the French gave them.
Yeah.
And then so the French would come back and be like, we know you're harboring communists.
Oh, Jesus.
And they would burn the village down. Yeah. And then we did that. We did the exact same thing.
And then the, under the thing of like, we don't want communism to spread, which is funny to be like, we don't want you want to be free, guys. So trust me. And you're like burning villages down. Like, trust me, this is better.
Well, and I think we did the same thing kind of in Afghanistan, right? Mm-hmm. In Iraq.
Stealing where it would be
like, we're going to give you guys money, work with us. And then the Taliban comes in at night and is like, puts a gun to their head and is like, well, you work with us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
that's the whole problem with everything, right?
Yeah.
If you go to, some, you know, if the cops go to a neighborhood bar, the only analogy I ever use and everything is a neighborhood bar. And, but if they go to a neighborhood bar and go, listen, we want you guys to do a couple of troublemakers in here. And the troublemakers are in there. Well, they're outside waiting for these guys to leave.
Yeah.
They're not there. They're only going to be there part. They know you're going to leave. You're not there to stay forever. So it always ends up screwing you, you know?
Yeah. And if we don't kill them at night, they're going to come get beheaded. Well,
Isn't that what happened in Vietnam? I mean, once they took over.
Exactly.
They Cambodia, all that stuff, they just destroyed. Genocide got rid of everybody that bugged them. Everybody with a pair of glasses, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean,
it's like they.
How'd you get those?
They literally went, well, just anybody who was so sort of fancy themselves, intellectual. It was like they, it's like the army came in and literally just rampaged through Bushwick, Williamsburg, and Greenpoint. In the past 3 years.
Nice.
And just said, everybody here who's been to a show at a bookstore, just line up.
Just burn the bookstores.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that's the thing about it. That's why I never really got into Vietnam. You know, I like the Civil War and World War II where it's like,
it's
kind of noble.
Right. It seems
and then,
like,
and then Vietnam is the first one that's like,
well, it's so, but even Korea was like a harbinger. It's all like Korea, so psychological. Yeah. And my, I had another uncle who fought in World War II and fought with Audie Murphy. Do you know who Audie Murphy was?
No, who's that?
He's a famous, he's the most famous World War II hero.
Okay.
Like they made him a movie star. He wasn't a good actor, but he was this legendary World War II. My uncle happened to be in his unit.
Oh, wow.
And he said that all the hype, to show you the difference in the war, all the hype about him was true. He goes, this guy was the bravest. He goes, he was so crazy. He'd run right into battle.
Yeah.
They were at Anzio. They were at Battle of the Bulge. All these places. He goes, he would just run right into battle.
He's nuts.
And, and in those days, they'd celebrate now.
Like,
man,
a hero.
Even, any movie about Iraq, there's still an undertone of darkness. All the World War II movies, they're like, hey, there's no problem here.
Yeah. Kick their ass.
Yeah, like this guy's great. You know, it had like a positive
like
tone to it.
John Basilone.
You know, what's that?
He was in the Pacific. There's a rest stop in New Jersey, like one of the first rest stops. That's what he got out of it.
Oh.
He got the Medal of Honor.
That's awesome.
It's in the Pacific. In the like he goes wild, picks up his gun without the fucking heat pad, just mows down the jet. And then he goes home. So they put him on a USO tour to send bonds.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I need to go back and fight.
Yeah.
So then he goes to Iwo Jima and is like, I'm going to do that gun thing again.
What?
And he died.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Bust out the trick.
But he got, yeah.
Yeah, boy, like, he was a strike trace, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom's cousin did three tours of Vietnam. He did one and he's like, send me back. He did another. Whoa. And he's like, give me one more.
Who did it?
My mom's cousin.
Wow.
He did three tours? He did two more.
Three, wow.
He was like, I'm not going back. I'm going to do it.
And what did he end up doing after the war?
I saw him like spazzing, fighting an arcade owner on the boardwalk one time.
That was Charlie.
Good man. He's a good man.
That was Charlie, dude.
Dude, he was.
But that's the whole point, yeah.
He was with my mom the one time when they were younger, and he was sleeping in the car, and some guy like screamed something at my mom, and he like popped up and just got out and beat the shit out. They were in traffic on the highway.
Yeah.
Beat the guy and throw him on the side of the road, and he's like, come on, let's go.
Imagine that guy. He sees a woman in a car. He's like, fuck.
The guy sits up.
Pops up. Yeah, dude, pops
that's
up.
That's a Vietnam
fresh from three tours. Yeah, I think it was like 74. Just pops up like, what?
Can you imagine three tours? I mean, that's two tours is crazy, but at least you feel like during the second tour, the guy's like, what did I say yes to this?
Yeah.
But if you go for three, that means you're like in all the way.
Yeah.
That's when I told the guy, the dude I was talking to, it was my ex-father-in-law. I was telling him about my mom's cousin. He's like, oh, that guy just likes killing people.
Yeah.
And I was like, eh, maybe.
I mean, he probably just, there's also the guy.
Everyone's got their thing.
You go there. You go there and then you go home and you're like, I can't be home after.
Yeah.
You're just in the fucking jungle.
Yeah.
Killing people. Now you got to go pretend to be a human.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like when you get off the road for a long time.
Yeah.
Say it happens to cops. It happens to cops to a lesser degree.
A friend. Was that? Yeah.
It happens to cops too. Yes. They get addicted to that adrenalized state. And they go home. They're like, this sucks.
Sure.
And they stay there forever.
But the other thing with Vietnam, which I've watched a lot of those YouTube guys where they interview, and you see the similarities in them eventually. And one of them is that they said they got screwed. First of all, just imagine this. Supposed to be the country sending all this money for aid. Several of them said the sea rations were terrible. He goes, We looked at the date on some of them. They were Korean and World War II.
Yikes.
That's how old the sea rations were.
Jesus.
That they're giving to the troops at supposedly the richest time in our history. And the other one is the M14. They said the M16 got more guys killed when they switched to the M16 because Westmoreland wanted, or one of these guys just, it was like a vanity project. The M14 wouldn't jam in the mud. The M16 jammed. And they said guys would just be getting killed, bayoneted to death because it would jam and you couldn't unjam it. The M14 was, the early gun was better.
It sucks.
Yeah. America really fucked up. I don't like it.
But yeah,
the whole thing was bums just me out.
Yeah.
And then each president had an opportunity to end it.
Yeah, that's right.
And they all just keep dragging it out.
But that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying about that state. Kennedy.
Yeah, he was close to ending it.
He was, but he wasn't.
Well, they made sure he didn't.
And they said, and this guy Van was talking to Henry Cabot Lodge, who was the ambassador. All the guys were close to Kennedy. And it was just one of those things where it's like, just at the last minute, it's like any other decision you've seen in any power person, where you're like, everybody has this logical argument, and then they go, no, I think this is better. Yeah. And you're like, what? Why? You don't even give us a reason. And he never gave us a reason.
It was.
Was there any kind of economic advantage that like was clear?
I don't think so.
Really? They didn't even like make any. Yeah, I guess there was nothing really there.
I mean, there was rubber. No, there was rubber. All the shit that was there was gone when we left.
True.
Yeah. Rubber, coconuts, all the rice. It was all gone. I mean, we killed it.
Damn, that sucks.
I mean, Agent Orange. I mean, when you think about it.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Agent Orange killing all the people. They said their levels of whatever, dioxin were three times anybody else by the time we left. And all the troops. I mean, doing it to your own troops is just crazy. I mean, that's the height of like immorality, you know, to just the guys that are there fighting and you're just like, yeah, well, you know, it's like, no. The other ones you have to really try to be a little more careful with, the opposite of what you're doing. It was really a weird situation, you know.
Also, the French were using napalm too.
They were before us?
Yeah, they were. We did everything they did.
Sounds like a French word.
Exact napalm. Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what that is?
Yeah, that's
just gel.
Yeah. Isn't it like petroleum gel and they light it on fire and you spread it if you like touch it?
You don't have to light it on fire. It just goes in your body. It burns.
Yeesh. And water makes it worse, right? Because if you grease fire, put water on it, it gets worse. Yeah, it stinks. And I mean, but France really wanted Vietnam, so.
Well, they had it before that.
Yeah.
They wanted it back. They had it. They lost it. They're like, I think we can get this back.
They want their baby back.
So it's spreading some fire on people.
Yeah. What is it about Vietnam? Because we apparently wanted it too. We went in there in the mid-50s and we couldn't leave. You ever go to a party and you're like, I got to leave. This party's over.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like.
It's like, you know what? Yeah, I guess I will do some coke.
You're saying it was 2 a.m.
And you end up going, I've only had left at 11 o'clock like I planned to. That's Vietnam.
This probably is just a psychological thing. It's like you want to be the best general. You start losing. You're like, we got this. And it's like, no, we should have this. Hear me out. This is my passion project.
Yeah.
This is my baby.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. Everybody was just about, you know, the military, like their job is to get more money for the military.
Mm-hmm.
How can you get more money if you're not in a war?
So how do they, what do you like? How's this thing progress? What do you, how does it end? What's going on?
Vietnam?
Yeah.
I mean, it ended when we left. It was the most, it was really, they're lucky it was the mid 70s. It was like 75, that famous rooftop thing.
Yeah, Saigon.
Thing.
Yeah.
They're lucky because by then everybody was, it was like the age of apathy when I was a teenager. People were just into drugs, you know, dancing, and, you know, it was just a very hedonistic time. People were done with all the protesting that happened in the 60s. People were done by the 70s, you know what I mean? And they're just like, yeah. And so when people left, there wasn't even outrage. It was like, oh, that was awkward.
That was a bummer.
That was just, people were just like, whoa.
Yeah, just, coke and disco,
And you feel bad for all the people that... all the Vietnamese who were still helping us by the end were fucked.
Yeah. Like that
they
famous,
got killed.
That helicopter on the roof.
The helicopter on the roof.
That picture. That's a long line.
Yeah.
And that's the last chopper.
That's right.
Those boys are staying, and that's right. A negative time.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
When that chopper takes off, and you're like next in line.
I've had a similar 5 minutes experience. Earlier. I was at Longwood Gardens waiting for a shuttle to like go see the shuttles. Like I was like the last guy. I had to wait like 15 more minutes. I was like, why? I don't know what happened. It settled down. It's better now.
No, it's not.
It's not tearing. The damage is done.
I mean, that's the thing. The power shift immediately.
Yeah.
And all the people, like when you think about the people right now in your life that you were like, ah, fuck you. And then if suddenly they're in power, they go, where is this son of a bitch? Doria, where does he live again?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you just hope they, you know,
well,
accidentally mistake you for Mike Feeney and kill him.
Yeah, but what's it like? So you grew up watching Vietnam, and then what was it like for you to see like the Iraq War and all? Because the older I get, the more I'm like, I believed this before.
I believed that there were weapons of mass destruction.
They got you too.
They got me. I believed it all the way. I said, there's got to be weapons of mass destruction. It wouldn't be this, you know, they wouldn't be going to this extreme after Vietnam.
Yeah, they wouldn't be
if it wasn't
true.
Oh. They're not going to be fooled twice.
Wouldn't be this diabolical.
I said, they can't be that stupid. You know, or diabolic. Either way, I said, there's no way there's not weapons of mass destruction.
It wasn't.
I mean, I was a kid.
Me and the Senate believed this.
Yeah, you and Hillary Clinton.
All of us, yeah.
Only a few didn't. I was a kid, and it was 2003.
Yeah.
So I was fresh off 9/11. I was an eighth grade patriot.
I had a bone to pick. Yeah.
I was pretty much a troop.
Yeah, they had you.
4 years later, I'd be going to West Point.
Yeah, they had you.
I was ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, Iraq, I was pumped. I was watching the, you remember when the, you
I like the fact
the news.
He thinks you get into West Point. You know, that's a hard school to get into.
I got it.
He was in.
You did?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm very impressed. You did?
Yeah. Well, I quit right away, but I went.
Oh, that's impressive.
Yeah.
What do you have to get on your finance ATs to get into a place?
I played football. That helped.
Oh.
Yeah. They got me in for that.
Yeah.
I got like an 11 something on my SATs.
Yeah.
Nothing. Okay. Yeah. It's a little
better than me, but it's not that good.
Little above average. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's potential 1100.
Like a 1030.
Yeah. I was 1100.
For football, that's a fucking 1600.
Yeah.
Dude, actually, speaking of the epidemic of fatness, Lemaire suffered a fat attack, dude, in public.
Oh, you're bringing up Lemaire's fat attack?
Yeah.
Lemaire
said it wasn't a fat attack.
It is 100% a fat attack, dude.
I'll give you the version.
Before we go any further, I will say this. High school football.
Yeah.
Every single year, a kid suffered from a fat attack. And it's the funniest thing in the world. No, you remember this? When the pussy kids on the team would be like, I'm having heat stroke. And they'd have to sit in the gator. They'd have to sit in the gator under the shade. Fat attacks on the football field.
Fat attacks are real.
And then occasionally dudes would die from fat attacks. Like every year across the country, a bunch of dudes die from fat attacks in practice. But every year, dude, one of them listens to this. One of my friends had a fat attack, and I know he listens to this. They taped ice across his chest, and he had to sit in the gator with his shirt off.
Yeah, you need they're like EpiPens or
Nugs,
like defibrillators.
Dude. What up, Nugs?
Instead of the defibrillator, you need like a fan for a fat attack. You're just like, oh, hold on.
Fat attacks are brutal.
Blow some air. Turn it up. No, we need high. Turn it up to high, doctor.
So, Lemaire, you got sent to the gator, dude. They had to put you under a tree.
This was a story I heard. It was that the place was packed, right? So, already it's packed, summertime. The threat levels for a fat attack are high. So I said, Lemaire pulls up.
They should have that on the news. Like a weather channel would be like, today's fat attack probability is red. We're in the red today. Might want to powder your balls, fats.
Powder your balls and keep a towel handy to dab your head.
If you're black, you can carry a towel, which is nice.
I saw a guy dabbing his head today.
If you're white, you must wear shorts and Crocs.
Yeah, so Lemaire, the story was, you rolled up. It was sweltering. It was crowded. And then
showed up uninvited.
Good friend of the
podcast.
Correct
me if I'm wrong. Uninvited to a full capacity.
He was warned. Our friends were like, Lemaire, it's really crowded here and it's really hot. You can come, but it's going to be kind of miserable.
So his friends were like, there's a good chance you're going to have a fat attack. I'm not going to say it, but it's hot up here. It's not built for the thicks.
Yeah.
The fats.
You were discovered on the steps of this place. Am I correct? sitting, not laying.
Didn't make it to the roof.
No, I think he made it. He went back in.
You can make like a video game out of it, like an Oregon Trail. Just Lemaire trying to get to a rooftop.
It was hot.
You have to stop and hunt for chips. You have the dump, dude.
Dude, it gets even better. So the story I heard that you, I guess you went out there, like, oh, it's too crowded, hit the steps, and then you were discovered by a friend of the podcast sitting there.
Friend of the podcast found you.
She was like collapsed in the hallway, concerned, and was like, "Dude, are you okay?" And you were like, "I don't feel well." So then you went and
they got to treat it. They got to throw buckets of water on him. They got to treat him like a whale being transported to a different tank. They got to throw water on him.
Lemaire was then transported to the owner's bed, the owner, and laid in the owner's bed. Fans on. Did you have a cold towel? I believe there's a cold compress applied.
No.
Ice, maybe?
You don't know? You blacked out?
There was ice. There was, you fatted out. There was ice. Your Honor, I fatted out. I don't recall. There was ice. I think the person applied ice. And you laid it.
To his brow?
To was his brow. Like, oh, true.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, Lemaire, quick question. I mean, we'll get off the...
Look at your pride right now. I see your pride.
I don't have any pride.
Admit your attack.
I was being a cool guy.
And you're being Mr. Cool?
I was being Mr. Cool.
How cool?
I was at the punchline before.
Oh, that's being Mr. Cool.
Cool with Andy and Nate, and I had like 3 or 4 scotch and sodas.
You can't drink. Do you drink?
I drink a little bit.
I feel like I've never drank with you.
No, we have to.
Now he drinks. Well, he's a mogul.
True. Now these bullying white executives.
So you had a couple of scotch and sodas.
I had a couple of scotch and sodas. Then I go to the roast battle, very nervous, get upstairs.
What are you nervous about?
Because I didn't think I'd get in. And then you get...
Oh, because it was full capacity and they said don't come.
Yeah, more welcome.
We can't let you in.
Yeah, but what else am I going to do? Just wait.
That's a Mr. Cool move. I know what you did. You big-timed everybody there. You said, big time, you know me.
More scotch and sodas. You barged
I'm Matt and
in.
Shane's producer. You
I didn't say nothing. I didn't say anything.
So you ran to your car and grabbed a knife.
True.
I followed an Indian.
And Matt's wife was there to stop you.
Andy was on a roast battle, so I followed them in.
Gotcha.
Andy was on it, so I came with him. And then they had this drink in the back that was like wine and I don't know. It was I drank
jungle
a bunch.
Juice?
I drank a bunch. Sangria. It was jungle juice. I think it was jungle juice. I drank a bunch.
Sangria brings me back to Madrid. I'm going back to Madrid, dude. I'm getting some sangria. A little fall, you get to walk through the streets and the marketplaces. They just ladle you some fucking.
You gotta go, dude.
Sangria.
You gotta go back.
I said, "Dame it, dame it."
Should go back like a full, like old school country, like a little.
I'm going
Paris
full. I'm going back, MAGA, dude. I'm going full MAGA.
Probably get respect over there.
The fascistas.
Fascistas, dude.
The fascistas will be like,
"Fuck yeah,
dude get this guy in here."
So, Lemaire, so you go in there, you shoulder to the punch bowl.
Yeah. You came
elbow
in.
Elbow your way to the punch
shit-faced.
Bowl.
I came in drunk, and I started power drinking. And then I the show was over, and I was like, I got to go on the stairs. I'm sweating. And I threw up, and I went to sit down. And then Kyle
threw up?
Ew,
you
show,
threw up punch?
I threw up. It was like a lot. It was like,
yeah, but you threw up oh, there was food in there.
Yeah, there was food in there.
Jesus Christ.
What were you grubbing on beforehand?
I don't know.
Yeah, you do. What were you grubbing on?
You
it
know.
Was probably Chipotle.
Oh, Chipotle and...
Chipotle, scotch, and jungle juice in a fucking hot stairwell? That was just... That's like a pressure cooker, dude. That's
yeah,
like a...
dude.
They put that... That's like what those
that's
kids...
That's a bomb.
That's... Yeah, that's Boston Marathon. They just... they just put Chipotle and scotch in a Lemaire. Set him on the sidewalk and he exploded.
So, you hit the steps, you puke.
After I puke, I hit the steps. I was on the steps because I was waiting for the bathroom to open up and waiting for nobody to be there so I can go puke. But then I was discovered.
Good friend Kyla Fox discovers you.
Yeah, a lady found him. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yay, what are you doing in here? Oh, my God, are you suffering from a fat attack on the steps? No, it was Chipotle. That's a fat attack, dude. Don't try to blame fucking pre-existing conditions on this.
That's that's true. That's like a COVID test.
Yeah, that's
you have
a COVID
pneumonia
test.
And you have a little bit of COVID. So you're discovered on the steps. So you did take refuge. You St. Francis of Assisi in someone else's bed.
Yeah.
Till your feet.
You rested up. They laid you to rest in someone's bed.
He was in a fevered state. In his fevered state. Huh.
Dude, just putting a fucking like sweaty dude you didn't invite to a party in your bed. I fucking hate you for this.
Sneakers on?
I didn't lay in the bed. I laid on the.
I can't believe you assumed he was wearing sneakers, but go ahead.
No, I'm saying.
Yeah, they were. Side of the bed, though. I didn't like put my feet on the bed.
Were you wearing your tennis shoes? Your finest tennis shoes? You didn't put your feet on the bed. No, you remember that. You don't remember anything else.
No, I remember Kyla.
You remember the thing where you were polite. That's what you remember?
I remember Kyla guiding me to the bed, and then she left.
Did you think you were getting some?
No.
You're like, damn, girl, you're going to take You move quick. She found you in the stairwell. I was like, come on, get to the bedroom now.
Quick, you have 24 hours. So how did you recover? What happened?
I laid down for like 10 minutes, and I went upstairs on the couch, talked about basketball, and then I drove home.
Fat attack. If you, you recovered home. In 10 minutes.
Now, when I grew up, when I was a kid, I lived in Mexico. And from when I was, I know. Like, I'm aware that's like not
Pennsylvania cool. Crushes Mexico.
Yes.
You guys are dying to get to PA, dude.
Yes. And I got obsessed with the idea of the president of the United States. It's where it became a thing to me. And the president at the time was Nixon. I cut a picture out of him out of the paper. And I put it, taped it up next to
Nixon?
My bed. Yes, I loved Richard Nixon. When I was a little kid, I was so about Richard Nixon. And I wrote a letter to my abuelita, my grandma.
Yeah.
And I sent her a picture of Nixon and said, this is the president of the United States. He's the greatest man. Greatest man in the country.
He's so cool.
He's the best man. I didn't know a single thing about him. Yeah. And he had this serious face. And I had a dream. It's the first dream I remember. My bedroom was in the front of our house. So you looked out at the front of our house. And I was asleep. And it was like a Sunday morning. And I heard a band, like a marching band. And I looked outside and it was Nixon. Like walking up my street, just no spectators.
Yeah.
Just him walking up followed by a marching band. Boom, boom, ba-dum, boom. And I came out on the front yard. We had this walkway, and he got down on one knee and he said, Louie. And I ran into his arms.
What the fuck? Damn, you love Nick.
I loved him so much. Damn, isn't that crazy? I've never told anybody that.
How heartbroken.
I've never told anybody that in my life. And so,
Louis. Like, senor.
And it's funny. There's only senor. The idea of his joy, because Nixon was such a miserable man that his joyful side was very rare. There's only one time I've ever seen it on film. And it's when he's playing piano. He's in a tuxedo. And I think he's at his daughter's wedding. And he was a concert pianist. He was very good. And he's playing piano and he plays some big crescendo. And he's got this big dumb grin on his face. And I think maybe I had seen that because that's the only, that grin, every time I see it, I'm in that dream. So, but my parents saw that I had these pictures of him next to my bed. And they were like, he's not. A good
he's not
guy.
That great.
He's not, because Watergate was happening. Yeah. And every night, my parents were sitting in front of the TV, this little fucking color TV, watching Watergate, watching the hearings. And it was like, shh.
And you're like, how's serious. It going?
Yeah. I'm like how's my boy going?
How's he doing?
Yeah. And Nixon's resignation was just like a depressing, destroying, sad, fucked up thing. It was just like, what now? Thank you.